Hi, everyone. This is Sarah Fanta speaking. I'm joined here at NQF by Sally Turbyville and Helen Burston, and we're here to discuss the imaging efficiency project. So I'm just going to go through a quick roll call. If you could just say if you're here or not, that would be great. Scott Gazelle?
Here.
Mike Backus? Jacqueline Bellow?
Here.
Steve Cantrell?
Present.
Troy Feisinger? Okay. Howie Foreman?
Here.
Okay. Mary Geminani? Okay. Ray Gibbons?
Here.
Okay. Richard Griffey? I'm sorry? Okay. Patricia Kuhn-Power? Okay. Laszlo Metzler?
Here.
Okay. Patty Raxson?
Here.
Okay. Don Rucker?
Here.
Gavin Setson?
Here.
Roger Snow?
Here.
Kirk Spencer? Okay. Arthur Stillman?
Here.
Okay. All right, great. Well, looks like we have a pretty good turnout. Is everyone logged into the webinar okay?
Yep.
Okay. Just to go through the meeting agenda, today we'll be discussing a brief project update and then going through the public and member comments that we received for Harmonized Measure IEP 00810. Moving forward, we'll go on to the letter of appeal that you should have all received in an email last night from CMS, and then we'll move on with next steps for the project. So our objectives today are to determine if Measure 8 should remain its recommendation for endorsement based on the member and public comments that we've received, and also to discuss the letter of appeal. And just to get everyone up to speed on what we've done up to date, the first set of measures that went through for public member comment as well as vote were also recommended and approved by CSAC on September 8th, and they're slated to move forward to go to the board of directors at their next meeting, hopefully in early 2011.
Sure, can you say again, what is CSAC?
The Consensus Standards Approval Committee,
okay,
which is the next step after steering committee, mm-hmm, in between steering committee and board ratification. Right. Okay. And then also in the meantime, we've collected public member comments for Measure 8. We received around 14 comments that we'll be discussing today. Are there any questions? Okay, great.
Okay, great. So we'll go ahead and move forward with the public and member comments on the appropriate cervical spine radiography and CT imaging and trauma. And as a reminder, it does look at the percent of adult patients who underwent a cervical spine radiography or CT imaging for trauma and who have a documented evidence-based indication prior to imaging. The steering committee did request that it be combined with an existing measure that looked only at radiography for trauma, and depending on the outcome for Measure 8, if it were endorsed, it would replace the existing measure with which it was combined. So what I proposed today for discussing the comments is we did break them up in two major categories. The first, and I'm going to pull them up on your web webinar right now, the first being comments about the draft report. I want to provide a little bit of context to some of these comments and then be sure to get any input from the steering committee. So the steering committee did request that the measure, which was similar to the existing measure, as I stated, that examines radiography only, be combined to include radiography and CT imaging. The report does require some clarification, and the NQF staff is set up to do that prior to posting for member voting and assuming that you don't reconsider its current recommendation for endorsement. Through the publication process here at NQF, there was a sentence dropped inadvertently that did note that the intention was to combine this measure. So as you can see from some of the comments, thankfully our commenters are very observant and do provide us feedback. The report was not clear in the intention to combine the measures. I think the steering committee was clear, as well as the measure developers, that that was our goal, but the report did not reflect that, and so we apologize for that, but we will certainly make sure that in the final cover letter for member voting and the report that the final outcome of combining these two measures is that if it is endorsed, it will replace the existing one as because it will have both radiography and CT imaging. So you'll see through here in the responses, we will work to clarify that. Now, before we just leave it to NQF staff response, I want to make sure that any of the steering committee don't have additional feedback that they want to be sure is reflected in our thoughts about addressing this. Okay, so with silence, I'll take that the NQF staff response to address the need to clarify the cover letter and the report will be sufficient.
Yes.
Yes.
Great.
Yes.
So what I recommend is that we dive down into some of the measure-specific issues, and I understand that Dr. Bellows has agreed to present any of the details of the measure that was combined and is being currently proposed for recommendation by the steering committee. I'm pulling up right now some of the higher themes, and we're more than willing to dive into the Excel spreadsheet to go into the individual comments, but there were some concerns about the testing evidence, the use of CT, and those were primarily the ones that focused on the specific issues of the measures. You can see for the testing evidence that NQF staff proposed a response, which was to remind the public and also kind of start the conversation with the steering committee if any further action needed to be taken, that this measure is currently endorsed for time-limited endorsements, which means that the measure developers would need to supplement their testing data with further testing information within 12 months. And then the measure developer also provided further information supporting their measure. And so at this time, you know, Dr. Bellows, if you would like to add to this or even take a step back and discuss the measure in more detail, please do so.
Unless anyone sees need, I'll remind everybody that when we were coming to the reliability and validity discussions, that was the whole premise on which we were couching this as time limited. And so does someone have a specific question about one of the specific grades into one of the specific sections dealing with this? If not, I'm not sure that anything needs further clarifying in terms of the discussion centered around time limited.
So NQF takeaway would be the response in combination with the additional information the measure developer provided and emphasizing that this measure is currently recommended for time-limited endorsement, acknowledging that there's a need for more reliability and validity testing is sufficient.
I think so.
Okay. Great. The other issues that we found focusing on the measure had to do with the use of CT, and we did get measure developer response back on those comments as well. And again, Dr. Bellows, if you want to add to what was previously deliberated for this measure.
Sure. We had discussed originally the different radiation doses attached to plain film radiography and CT. We had also discussed that the direction in which CT technology is moving has substantially made it the replacement exam over radiography. That said, in places without 64-slice scanners, they may be still beginning, at least, with plain films. So that rather than just totally eradicate the radiography, which would leave some places in the dust, it was felt that both modalities should be dealt with, And in particular, regarding CT, if anything, it underlines the need to attach appropriateness of imaging because the dose can be some 17 to 33 times greater than the plain film dose. And given the extent of utilization, that it would be important to have both the CT and radiography addressed. That said, and I don't know if you want me to continue with this comment or not, but that said, right on the bottom of what's on the screen right now from the American College of Radiology, they felt as though the wording of the each measure that was submitted as in the appendix, we have, I think, an A and a C, if I'm not jumping ahead too far, and they felt as though the language was confusing as to how it addresses only CT or only plain film, or what if the patient had an antecedent plain film and then the question raised by a radiologist that a CT would be necessary. So I think that just to summarize what I've tried to put on the table, that both modalities are still used, although clearly there is a migration in terms of standard of care where the technology exists to the CT exam, that we would keep both in the in our purview, and that in particular, because of the differential dose attached to CT, that it would be important to, you know, stressing the importance of the measure in terms of appropriateness. And then maybe we can discuss as a side issue the clarification of the actual language if this were to go forward. And I would invite Howie, who takes, you know, full credit as the other primary reviewer, to edit or chime in. Howie Foreman.
I'm very supportive of what you said. I agree.
Okay.
Yeah. Steve Cantrell in Denver, I support this as well. And being an emergency physician, I mean, we're the ones that are going to bear the brunt of this. And I think you've done a very nice job explaining this. I mean, I'd also like to add that the American College of Emergency Physicians did not get their comment in on time, but they endorsed this for a time-limited measure and also are in favor of harmonizing the measures. And I like the way you stated this, because very often we will start with plain films, but only if the films are inadequate for anatomic reasons or other reasons do we even go to CT. So I think you've dealt with that dilemma very well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree with that. This is Snow, Massachusetts. And, you know, the purpose of this measure is to look at the use of appropriate criteria for doing the procedure, mm-hmm. rather than to assess how much either technology is being used. So the Canadian criteria and the Nexus are really what's being measured. So both should be in there for that reason, if not for the other very good ones.
Okay, so it sounds like the comments were helpful and also directed us to a need to potentially clarify the specification so it's understood that it's a patient count, et cetera.
That's correct.
Okay. So in looking at all the other comments, are there any other questions about the various public and member comments that we received about this measure? I want to make sure that by going by theme, we haven't inadvertently skipped over a comment that any of you want to discuss.
One more point that the American College of Emergency Physicians wanted to make is that they do feel that this is really much more appropriate for electronic ordering systems and might be difficult to implement on a manual basis. And I think we as a steering committee, appreciated that.
I think so, and I think that echoes, this is Dr. Bello again, that echoes one of the other comments that was registered. In fact, I'm just digging for which one it is now, but
No, CMS made a comment along those lines.
Right.
Yep.
Okay. Any other input, feedback?
Let's keep trudging along here.
Right. Yeah, so I think we can move along. Given the conversation today, it sounds like the recommendation to continue moving this measure forward in the endorsement process stands from the steering committee.
That's correct.
Yes.
Yes.
Great.
I'm sorry, what was that?
Agree.
Great. Okay. So that went very efficiently. That's great. We like that. So I think what we're going to do now is pause for public comment. So, operator, if you could open it up for public comment to ask the steering committee or provide any input on any questions on what we've just discussed on the measure.
Absolutely. And, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question or pose a comment, press star 1 on your telephone keypad at this time. Again, for questions and comments, press star 1. And there appear to be no questions or comments at this time.
Sally?
Okay, yes. So I think we can go ahead. We'll open it back up for public comment later, operator. So if there are no questions at this time, we can put it back into the participant call with the public still listening.
Absolutely. You may proceed.
Okay, great. Thank you. So we're going to go ahead and move on to the next agenda item, which is the CMS appeal letter that you all received yesterday, and we appreciate and acknowledge the short turnaround time, but we wanted to make sure that we got some any input from the steering committee. I believe we have some folks from CMS on the call. If you could please announce yourself so that the steering committee is aware of who's on the call, that would be great.
This is Susan Arday with CMS.
Welcome, Susan.
This is Charmin Stevens and Charlie Rootman from the Lewin Group. We are a CMS contractor.
Okay. Thank you for joining us. Has anyone else from CMS been able to join in on the call?
Okay.
So at this time, I'd like to hand it over to Helen to kick off the discussion and provide some context.
Okay. Hi, everybody. Thanks for taking the time to do this today. We figured as long as we had the call already set up, we would try to get your input before this appeal flows through the more normal processes at NQF for an appeal. As many of you know, the consensus development process is quite proscribed in our role as a standard-setting organization and always includes an appeals process. So we recently just received last week a letter from CMS asking that a reconsideration of the decision not to endorse two of the outpatient imaging measures that they were interested in using, the simultaneous use of brain CT and sinus CT, and the use of brain CT in the ED for atraumatic headache. So our usual process would be that appeals would initially go to the Consensus Standards Approval Committee for their consideration, but we would usually bring it through the steering committee to get your input. So we thought as long as we had you available today, the discussion is always better when we actually have a group together. So we sent the letter along. In sum, I think the issues are as outlined on the simultaneous use of brain CT and sinus CT, which those of you will probably recall as they commented on in the letter that there was concern that this was a fairly low incident event of this double scanning, and I believe it actually failed on importance because of the lack of significant impact. The second measure was slightly more complicated, the use of brain CT in the ED for atraumatic headache. And in that instance, initially the committee recommended the measure overall, put it off public comment, and got significant comments with concerns for unintended consequences as a result of the measure. CMS has provided additional information here that we wanted you to have an opportunity to review. In addition, there is a table attached now to the letter as well, which gave an alternative minimum case count methodology with a table for the sinus CT, head CT measure. So So at this point, we would really just like to get the steering committee's input before we bring it further through our process, see if any of the material provided by CMS and the developers would yield potentially a different result, or whether you would actually like to reconsider these measures one more time. Let's just take them one at a time if we can, and perhaps just open the discussion about the simultaneous use of brain and sinus CT. And if anybody in particular was the primary reviewer on it, we would especially welcome your considerations there as well.
Well, speaking out, I was one of the primary reviewers, and again, I think that the primary failure was on that of importance, and we were concerned about that, especially early on in this process, that we should go after the big items and not maybe nitpick. I mean, I appreciate what CMS has said in terms of the counts, and obviously one too many is still too many, but I think that was the overall feeling of the committee at the time. We didn't even get into the detail aspects of it.
This is Jacqueline Bello, and I do also remember part of the discussion being that putting a measure such as this forward should be done with the important population in mind, namely not necessarily Medicare, but the gross overuse in the pediatric population, where the impact is greater in terms of long-term dose exposure. And so that I remember specific discussion having to do with that as well.
And this is Gavin Satson. One other issue that arose was the potential for appearing as an outlier based on volume, particularly in peripheral areas, and that was a major concern too.
Could you just explain what you mean by peripheral areas?
Well, I think some of the thresholds that were under consideration and the volumes that were given, and it may not just be isolated to peripheral areas, but certainly for low-volume users, this could raise an issue in terms of compliance or appearing as an outlier.
This is Susan Arday. I'd like to address that. Exhibit 1, the table of required case counts for the 90% confidence and specific precisions for the simultaneous use of brain CT and sinus CT, demonstrates that we would not report something that did not have a 90% confidence around it. And if you look at that exhibit, you'll see. So I hear what you're saying, but we would not report something where it would be misconstrued.
Now, are these tables different than the ones that were presented for initial consideration?
Yes, based on the committee's concerns, we went back and tightened, increased the sample sizes that are needed and worked with the statisticians on that.
This is Ray Gibbons. Could you please explain? I'm looking at Exhibit 1, and I don't understand when you say sample size needed. What do you mean? That's the number of cases the hospital would have to be reported?
Yes, in the denominator.
So how many hospitals, then, are we talking about that qualify?
Okay, when we redid the analysis, and applied the revised minimum case count numbers, we found, it's in the letter, there were over 2,500 facilities that would still have sufficient volume.
Using what threshold?
The thresholds that are in Table 1. And basically, this the way this works is the actual number of cases you need is related to the rate. And in some cases, it actually takes quite a high volume.
So can you just walk me through, for example, the line that reads observed rate 0.10? The required precision stated there is 0.065. What is 0.065? Is that the 90% confidence? Or is that the standard deviation?
Let me check for a second, because I need to talk with the statistician. Hang on. Let me go get my staff person, okay? I'll be right back.
Yes, Sally, I've got a couple of Steve Cantle in Denver. I got a couple of questions. It appears that CMS is going on with these measures, regardless of what NQF says. So why are they even appealing this? I mean, in terms of the outpatient prospective payment for calendar year 2012, they've already got the simultaneous use of brain computer tomography and sinus computer tomography as one of their measures, as well as the brain computer tomography in an emergency department for a traumatic headache. So why are they even coming back to us? I mean, what are we, chopped liver?
This is Susan Arday. No, you're not chopped liver. However, anybody whose measures are not initially recommended for endorsement has a right to appeal, and CMS is exercising that right. That's all it is.
I understand, but I said, why are you even appealing when I already see the stuff, the measures you're going to be using in calendar year 2012, and you've mentioned those measures?
My understanding is that this whole process was supposed to be done in time for final rulemaking. That did not happen.
Well, so
therefore, we have to move ahead because we have legal decisions that have to be made on certain calendar deadlines, but we do have the right to appeal.
I know. I'm not questioning your right to appeal, but I guess what I'm saying is, isn't the appeal somewhat moot since you've already published the guidelines with those measures in it?
No, the appeal is not moot because we have the right to appeal. It's not moot.
Susan,
let me just try this. This is Helen Burson. I think what Steve's asking is a slightly different question. No one is arguing with the right to appeal, as I mentioned at the start. That's obviously core to our process. I think his question is, if it's already included in the payment rule, it's not clear what impact the appeal and the reconsideration would have. I guess my take on this would be that certainly the preference for CMS is to use NQF-endorsed measures, so by reconsideration, and again, they put those measures out in the proposed rule before the project was done. So,
because of our calendar deadlines that are dictated by the law.
So at times things do move on and off that list, Steve.
Okay, so they will be taken off the list then if this appeal is not upheld?
Not necessarily. CMS is able to use measures that are not NQF endorsed, so there's a process they need to go through to justify that. But I think the preference would be to present additional information to the steering committee and see if the steering committee believes the measures deserve further consideration based on the additional information.
Right, and that is certainly their right.
Yes, and that's all we're doing today.
Yeah.
Don Rucker, I have sort of a general background question on this. Does CMS have data, as you got the data that you showed here, on how often this combo is sort of just plain inappropriate versus how often there's some sort of somewhat complicated medical issue that's being sorted out here?
Charlie, Charmin, they're the ones that have that data.
Okay. That,
Charmin's back, okay.
Yeah.
We're not in the same location, so that's why I ask. I'm in Baltimore and they're down in Virginia.
All right. What we have is the first thing, and then I need to pull some other data. We found in 2008 that we had 68,000 visits for Medicare patients where they received the combined study. Okay. Now, hang on, because I need to then we pull out exclusions, but I need to pull some data.
So you don't know what number, following up on what Don said, what number of those were actually appropriately studied?
We can answer that question. She just has to check the data.
How can you answer the question? I mean, how would you know from claims, for example, that it was appropriate or inappropriate to do both studies?
Because we follow the exclusion criteria. The ones that end up in our counts are the ones that should not have been included, should not have been done.
I understand, but I guess what was said and what I'd be saying is that there would be many others that you wouldn't be able to know about for complicated reasons that couldn't be captured by the
for brain CT and sinus CT combined?
Yeah.
Give me some examples.
I mean, you're speaking of basically ICD-9 codes. Is how you're excluding them?
Yes.
What we do is, this is Dr. Brutman, what we do is, of all the tests, we exclude based on, we go through an expert panel and scientific and experts in the area who provide what tests should be, which cases should be excluded because, in this case, it could be a person with a diagnosis of intracranial abscess or trauma or tumor or some other exclusion. So those cases are excluded from the count. Therefore, it is unless you know you don't. It could happen that they don't report all the diagnoses, and well, that would be a problem in how the claim comes through. But based on the claims information, we exclude those inappropriate, those what would be appropriate to do the test. And in other cases, the guidelines state that it would not be an appropriate test to perform the simultaneous test. That's why those would be considered like that should not have been performed. But the claims data does provide significant information. Yes, we can always say that people could have a problem in the data they provide, but this is, it would still show across all institutions the level of usage of this measure, of this test.
I'm sorry, I missed what guideline you were using to declare that the folks who didn't have the specific list of inclusions were inappropriate.
The guidelines, and our apologies, but we learned about that this was going to be discussed a couple of hours ago. That's why we're gathering the information.
Sure.
As this comes up, it's not that we didn't have it and we're trying to get it. But the guidelines, as I understand, are there's the American College of Radiology appropriateness criteria for headache in 2009, the ACR appropriateness criteria for tuner nasal disease in 2009, and the American Academy of Otorhinolaryngology of 2007.
And we provided all that information when we submitted the measure originally for consideration.
Well, those are the major. Let me see if there's any other.
And
exclusions were claims with primary or secondary diagnosis codes related to trauma, tumor, orbital cellulitis, or intracranial abscess.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess just the simple question is that the feeling, and I understand that a lot of this was, discussed back when we originally did this, but in terms of the appeal, in terms of the 68,000, those are, with all of that, with all of those conditions excluded that were just listed.
I'm going to give you the exact number. No, these are, the rates are based exclusion. The denominator, the rate that it comes up is based on excluding those cases.
Okay. The only reason I think people are interested in this is because it's a relatively small number. It's a little bit of an odd, not totally, and you can certainly imagine, some inappropriate stuff, but it's a little bit of an oddball combination. It's not something I think docs are reflexively ordering, I don't believe. Unlike maybe just a plain head CT where you could sort of say, let's just get it. I think a lot of us clinically think most of these people probably have a little bit more of a story than maybe we're capturing in the claims data. And given the small number and given the fact that for many hospitals, the criteria could really be elegantly applied because they don't make, numeric criteria, may be a problematic measure.
This is Susan Arday. What is the numeric criteria?
Well, I think that's what was...
Because, this is also an issue of patient safety. And we're all well aware of what was in the media in the past year with folks getting various head CTs, not necessarily for this situation, where they unfortunately got way more than what they needed in terms of radiation dose.
Yeah, but that's
a much different scenario
altogether.
Well,
much different. That's
anytime you do an image for somebody where it wasn't necessary and involves radiation, they're getting radiation exposure.
Obviously,
you need to compare apples.
Nothing to do with what was in the. This has nothing to do with what was in the media, nothing whatsoever.
I realize that what was in the media is not the same imaging procedure. However, when you're doing an image on someone, it involves radiation, and they didn't need it.
No, that is not at all what happened. Those were images done. It's irrelevant to this conversation. But to be clear, those were images done on people who needed them, and what happened was they failed to follow protocol.
Right, but couldn't you also argue that anytime you do an image on someone, whether it's needed or not, the protocol could be failed to be followed? In other words, don't do an image if you don't need it.
Yeah, I think you're really stretching things. That's
I don't agree with you, Dr. Gazelle.
I would say that there are two things to clarify. First, we can discuss the impact and the number. I understand that concept. The question is, And there's been issue of overexposure, but I think there's a whole concern on not providing inadequate or inappropriate or unnecessary tests, because there is radiation with each one of them, and, you know, we could say 68,000 are few, too many or too few, and this is just for the Medicare population. So I think that's the relevance, is do not provide unnecessary radiation exposure to populations when it's an issue that is of concern for the medical community today. And also it's important to note is that the primary, you know, when this was reviewed, it was recommended by, you know, the primary reviewer from NQF did recommend the measure for endorsement, and we understand maybe the impact issue, but I don't think, well, it seems that there's some discussions today on if it's appropriate or not, or we using the guidelines, but I think the discussion is should we, even if it's a smaller number, we can dictate what that number is. Since I don't know if there's objective criteria, if there's something that should not be done, why would not be endorsed as a measure which really doesn't create any additional burden on NQF or anybody?
Well, I mean, to put the radiation thing in perspective, so in the typical Medicare patient, I understand they're not all over 65, the radiation cancer risk from this for 68,000 people, even if you use something like the 1 in 5,000, which is, I think, not appropriate for this volume of radiation or this age, I mean, we're talking about, you know, one or two or three patients likely on a statistical basis out of 68,000 who would have an additional cancer.
That makes it okay to do an unnecessary test?
Well,
no,
of course not.
Can we take the science of the matter, and could we take some of the emotion out of this, please?
Yeah, I mean, no, it's just a question of, I think, the prioritization, right? So if we're doing hundreds of NQF measures, as is, you know, CMS, as things roll out, just keeping, you know, keeping the focus on the ones that have big dollar and big clinical impact, I think is sort of the question here.
What do you define as big dollar? What do you define as big impact? We don't know how to meet that if somebody won't define that for us.
Let me turn it around. If you looked at your analysis, I'm just, how many hospitals do you think would be eligible to be included in the consideration of this measure out of the U.S. hospitals?
2,500.
3,500?
2,500.
25, so roughly half?
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I think in any individual hospital, and we're talking, you know, a handful of patients who would be affected by this measure over the course of a year. I think that's sort of what people are somewhat concerned about.
Did we ever get a description of how to read Table 1? There was some question about understanding.
No, this is Ray Gibbons. To my knowledge, we've not gotten the answer.
We have not.
We're addressing this, and we have the person.
And what about the answer to the question of the 68,000, how many of those would be judged to be inappropriate? Because that was the total number that they were done on the same day.
Locating the actual data. Again, remember, the first time we heard about this meeting was a couple of hours ago, but we have the staff person who can explain how to read the table for you.
Yeah, I think that's all we need.
A pull in the original program.
There's a question they have is, for example, I take point one, what does the required precision mean and the sample size?
Oh, yeah, what that means is on the line with the 0.05, the observed rate of 0.05, what the precision means is that you need 572 cases so that we'd be 90% confident that the actual rate is somewhere between 0.05.
I'm sorry.
Is someone on a cell phone or something? Because it keeps buzzing in and I can't hear.
Oh.
Could everybody mute if they're not speaking? Thanks.
So you take the observed rate of 0.05 line. And the required precision would give you a range. So it'd be 0.05 plus or minus 0.015. And we say that you'd need 572 cases, a minimum count, to be 90% confident that you're within that range. So the precision gives you a range around the observed rate.
Okay. And how does that relate to the median and the distribution?
The median and the...
Because the explanation in the attachment has a final sentence. Thus, the precision and required sample size declines as the ratios increase. For example, a hospital with a ratio of 0.10 would require only 58 cases in order to be confident that the actual ratio is above the median. What is the median?
I mean, 0.035.
You mean the median for this measure?
Yeah.
The median for this measure in the 2008 data was...
The median... 0.026.
0.026.
Okay, so could we go back to the lower lines on the table? This is Ray Gibbons again, because I still am struggling to understand this table. If the observed rate is 0.005, and then the required precision stated there is greater than the observed rate, it's going below zero, clearly, so it must be kept at zero. So how do we interpret that line? What is the 94 required for? It's certainly not to say that we're confident it's above the median, so it's saying something else.
You're confident that it's below the median.
Below the median. So if I add 0.012 to 0.005, I have, by my math, 0.017.
0.017.
Is that correct?
Yes, right.
So, and that's well below the median of 0.026, so I don't understand that required precision.
Well, keep it pretty constant up through...
Yeah, I know it keeps pretty constant, and I don't understand that. That's why I've asked you the question.
Our biggest concern on this was on the high-end cases, because those are...
Yeah, so that's why I'm asking again the question, because there's a 94 there that I really don't understand. There's a statement made that the numbers increase as the rates increase, numbers decrease as the rates increase. I could understand that. Why do they decrease at the low end?
Oh, because one, we know that you're pretty confident that it's not going to be on the high end. If you got a 0.05, you don't need to have that many cases to know that you're that the observed rate's not going to be an outlier.
Why is the
required decision trying to do here was to say we wanted to identify outliers, and we didn't want to exclude hospitals that were high outliers, even though they didn't have a lot of cases, because if the rate is high, we're pretty certain that it's going to be an outlier. We don't need a lot of cases to know to be confident of that. Although if you're fairly low and around the median, I think you need a lot of cases to make sure that it is fairly low.
I'm with Ray on this. I don't understand where the number listed under the required precision comes up, because it would seem to be much stating a required precision that's much more than is necessary if the observed rate is as low as it is. You're well away from the median. May I ask another question? We said 68,000 and 2,500 hospitals, so that's an average of 27 of these cases at most, at say, an average hospital. Do you have information on the distribution per hospital? Because if it's 27 cases for an average hospital, none of them will meet the sample size. And I thought you previously said that you had information on the number that would meet the necessary sample size.
I'm sorry, say it again.
Well, you said 68,000 of these cases, round numbers, and 25 hospitals. So if you just divide 68,000 by 2,500, you get 27 cases per hospital. So obviously, they don't all have 27 cases. Do you have information on the distribution of the number of times this combined scanning occurs at an individual hospital? You know, saying that there's 68,000 across the country, that doesn't help us much to understand what's happening at individual hospitals.
We don't have it handy, the information. I mean, we have to go back to our databases. And I don't know if we'll be able to do it in this time frame. But
again, Steve Cantrell, dealing with importance, I am still concerned that we're talking about putting forward a measure that applies to less than half the hospitals in the U.S. I mean, that would, again, it seems to me that we're maybe not going after the big stuff first.
I agree with that.
If I can just make, Jacqueline Bellow, if I can make a qualitative instead of maybe everyone needs a break from the quantitative comment for a moment. We talked about conceptually, you know, one out of 68,000 is too many for cancer. As a neuroradiologist that reads a lot of CTs of the head, the statement saying that the head includes large portions of the paranasal sinuses is true. However, it excludes your typical CT of the head, which is a much more common exam than CT of the sinus, excludes most, if not all, of the maxillary sinus. And so particularly in the older age group, do we want to send messages back to our ER friends and others that all's okay on the home front in a patient with headache and fever when we've not seen the maxillary sinuses? And then the only other comment I want to make that is qualitative is that in our institution, when we do sinuses for headache, fever, as opposed to sinuses for your excluded criteria like tumor or abscess or those, but your generic headache, fever, we do a low-dose exam. And that's because you don't need more to see the bones. So specifically, I'm not talking about your sarcoid patients or Wegeners where soft tissues are important. I'm talking about your headache, fever, you know, 70% or more of the sinuses from the ER.
And this is Gavin Stetson. As an otolaryngologist, I completely agree with that. And if there is any concern about sinonasal pathology, one will want a coronal view in addition anyway, and that can be certainly focused to the middle meatus and give you a pretty good indication of what's going on.
Right, but that's a different exam. That's not your typical CT of the head from the ER.
Correct, but that's why I'm saying if there is an indication, you need a head and a coronal.
You need the real thing, yeah. Which is why I think that, you know, looking perhaps in the same way that we just drilled on indications and appropriateness for C-spine, that we look at maybe indications or, I mean, I'm not the writer of a measure here, but I do think that suggesting that A is good enough. I mean, I'm the proud owner of two 85-year-old parents, and one of mine was hospitalized with sepsis of unknown origin this past year, and I would have hated to have missed her maxillary sinus if that was a source, which it wasn't, but. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
One is too many. I mean, if one is too many, then that's true for our friend, the maxillary sinus.
This is Scott Gazelle here. I'm not hearing any any comments from the steering committee members suggesting that they're inclined to reconsider. If that's the case, maybe we could move on to the other measure. Ellen, is that reasonable?
Sure.
Agreed.
Great. All right. Got to leave it to you to decide the next session then.
Okay, so the next measure was the use of computed CT in the emergency department for atraumatic headache. Jacqueline, were you going to summarize?
I was not
that
a
well?
Primary reviewer on that. We had 07, not 10 or 13, if you remember. But I'm happy to.
Are any of the primary reviewers from that one on the call? So that one, I think, is a bit more complicated issue from my recollection and read of the notes. Is that we initially voted for endorsement of that one, but then in view of public comments and discussion on our last conference call, or perhaps a call before that, but on one of our conference calls, we were concerned that this could lead to unintended consequences, perhaps underuse, or penalize sites that were doing it for other reasons that wouldn't be captured, and then so reverse the voting. That's my recollection of the process.
This is pay for reporting. This is, there's no penalty connected with this one way or the other, whether they do well or they do poorly or they do average.
I understand, but...
But please don't use that word penalty, because you make it sound as if CMS is going to come after someone or a hospital, and that's not the case.
I think, Steve Pianto, I think the issue, one of the big issues, and we alluded to it before, that, and this gets somewhat to the other measure that was proposed in terms of appropriateness of head CT, was using accepted criteria rather than ICD-9 codes. And I think that's, as people may recall, I believe almost all of the concerned comment came from emergency medicine.
ER.
Mm-hmm. Well, we call it emergency medicine,
yes.
Not ER. Thank you. ER is the TV show. And yet the American College of Emergency Physicians has been extremely supportive of measures going through. And I think we had to listen to that. There was a lot of I think, very reasoned concern with this measure. And I think, unfortunately, part of it is attendant to any measure which is based solely on ICD-9 codes, because we all know the problems with something like that. So I think that's really where some of that came from. I think there were, was... the two emergency physicians on the steering committee voted against this right from the get, because we could see what the problems were going to be in terms of the implementation of this in emergency departments across the country. So I think that's a little more history, Scott, I think, of where we were with this.
Hi, thank you very much.
This is Patty Rex, and I'm sorry I had to answer a page. I actually was one of the reviewers for this measure initially. And I think it's even a little bit more complicated than Dr. Cantrell has said. I think when we had our initial meeting, this measure was actually considered alongside the measure which had been proposed by the emergency physicians for a similar topic. And we had elected as a group to go with this measure, but I think that there was some concern even at that point that this measure was looking only at the Medicare population, and those are the patients who are actually statistically most likely to have abnormal pathology on the CT scan that's ordered. And I think we felt as a group when we reconsidered the measure and considered the appeal of the emergency physicians that there were potential problems with moving ahead with this measure, since the group that we all recognized we really needed to be looking at was the young, otherwise healthy patient. And I think that eventually influenced us to vote against proceeding with this measure.
So so could I ask, is there anyone on the steering committee who feels that we should reconsider that decision? If not, Helen and QF staff, maybe we can move on to the next agenda item, and I assume there's a formal appeals process that will play out and separate from this call anyways.
Right. So basically, let me just explain it to you. What we typically do is ask the steering committee for their guidance, which you have just provided to us, so thank you. We will summarize back for our consensus standards approval committee, and they will then make a recommendation to the board of directors about the appeal decision. So this has been very valuable. I guess the only other question I'd have is if there's any additional information any of you think would be useful for us to request to the developers on a slightly less accelerated timeline that might be useful for the CSAC or board in particular, please let us know that. But I think other than that, I'm not sure you actually have very much left on your agenda, Scott. So
no, we don't. I think another
public comment.
Time of public comment.
Helen, one question. Steve Pianto, will we be kept abreast of the progress of the appeal as well?
Happy to do that for you. Yes.
Thank you.
Can I ask a question? I mean, I understand your position, and there seems not to be additional information. And obviously, one of the concerns is a measure that was initially significantly approved by a significant margin or recommended and then changed. And I understand some of the concerns, but how can we explain
the variability that we see among facilities? Because I would understand that everybody, if every emergency department would face this and you say, look, this measure is inappropriate, and because the guidelines, you know, there shouldn't be then any guidelines to use or not use. And especially if everybody is at a high level or everybody is at a certain level, I would say, yes, everybody's performing. But how do we would explain this huge variability among facilities that we see?
Don Rucker, is the variability in the Medicare population or in the general population?
In the Medicare population.
Well, this is Ray Gibbons. I remember from the appeals the point about coding. So this might well be variability in coding.
We would also have the same variability across. That would mean that every measure, I don't think coders are better or worse for headaches or in emergency departments than for other issues. So I would understand if that were a common theme that you would have hospitals that had bad coders and we would always see them as outliers. In this case, we have a huge variability on a medium of 0.37 in hospitals that get to 80%. I mean, I think we even had, I don't know if they were excluded, but...
I guess I could do this, Ray Gibbons, again. I'm just going to reflect my experience within the limited realm of cardiovascular disease, where coding works well in some areas in my institution and not so well in others. And that's within a very narrow spectrum of disease, not across the whole spectrum of coding.
I think part of the challenge is clinically, unlike younger patients, of whom there are far, far, far more with headache without obvious neurologic findings who have just headache without anything else, where, you know, I think this measure in a different age group would be targeted. I think most of these older patients are actually coming in with headache, weakness, dizziness. I think there are very, very, very few of them who are coming in with headache and nothing else, you know, if you were to do a chart review. And I think that's sort of part of the challenge here is, yeah, how do you deal with the sort of weak and dizzy who mention headache? Because I'd be willing to bet money, you know, based on having seen, you know, many of these patients, that that's sort of what is in this group.
Mixed bag.
Pardon me?
I said a mixed bag in a population who is going to have statistically something else wrong.
Yeah.
Instead of being, you know, a 40-year-old marathoner.
I would agree again with that concept, and I would say there are exclusions, but I wouldn't, if we look at it from the patient perspective, we would understand that, you know, maybe they don't define well or the diagnosis, but that would go to the sense that every hospital would have the same value. It would not explain the variability by hospital.
And I'm looking, this is Susan Arden, I'm looking at the use of brain CT in the ED for a traumatic headache, and one of our denominator exclusions is, in fact, dizziness and giddiness, syncope, collapse.
But the big problem with that is that you assume those get coded, and if they don't get coded, then they are not in compliance. And I think that's one of the big issues that people brought up before. And I agree with what Ray said. I mean, in our institution, I mean, sometimes the code is good, and sometimes you can't figure what they had for breakfast.
No, I don't want to be quoted as having said that.
And you're certain the things that you believe we're not picking up in claims would be in the chart?
Without question.
Yeah, and certainly the specific example that was cited by at least one of the comments, for example, use of Coumadin, is something that would be very obvious in a chart. And not necessarily coded in electronic claims.
Okay, I understand the perspective, but I think it's almost like we are assuming that if hospitals do not code well, they don't have to follow a specific guideline in this case, and I think that's... I think the challenge was in this case when we looked at to the TAP members, the experts who had come to discuss it, they were... in some cases, appalled by saying, you mean you have hospitals that 100% of the patients, this was one of the discussions we had, that so everybody, every patient that came to an ER and said they had a headache got a CT scan, basically. They were like, oh, my God, I can't believe this is happening. But this is one of the discussions we had. There are hospitals where almost literally every patient that came in, and I think that is an inappropriate use of either the technology and leads to multiple other consequences that, you know, that then hospitals would not have to follow almost any measure that is
claims-based.
I think no one is saying that. I think the problem is that we all want measures that, in fact, are accurate and are and portray our behavior appropriately so, in fact, we can improve. I think there is great concern that because of the methodologies involved in certain situations, they do will not accurately portray the actual practice of medicine. And then we don't know what we're shooting at. So I don't think anyone would say, oh, yeah, we're going to just CT everybody. That's inappropriate completely. But I think there is, we would like to have, to the degree possible, we would like to have evidence-based measures, not measures just are based on something which we don't have any control over. I have no control over how my charts are coded in the ED. You know, what's picked up and what isn't picked up. So I think that's part of the plea, that measures that we have, let's make them evidence-based, let's make them as accurate as possible.
Can I agree, and again, I don't want to distract the whole committee on this, but since I would agree with, if following that same analysis and agreeing that, I think by measuring them, because they're not being penalized, by measuring them, there's going to be much more improved coding because they are going to have to be measured, and that's why if they're not measured, there's no, let's call it, incentive to do things right or improve to demonstrate that's appropriate test. By telling them we're going to measure you on this and we want to see your results, people are going to code much better, and which will lead to everybody getting, you know, better information.
In a perfect world, that would certainly be true. All I can say is with Ray, I have very limited exposure to this, but I can say in my institution, and there's nothing bigger than the dollar in terms of a drive, I can't even get people to improve their coding with the promise of increased funding. So I would disagree with that, unfortunately. I wish it were true.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you for taking into account our considerations.
Thank you, folks.
Okay, yeah, thank you, everyone. That was a very good conversation, and we'll, as Helen noted, we'll keep you in the loop as we move forward with the formal appeals process. We do want to quickly talk to you about next steps, circling back to the appropriate cervical spine radiography and CT imaging and trauma measure, which currently all of you have decided as a committee to maintain the recommendation for it to move forward through the endorsement process. We will be posting it for member vote with the updated report so that it's more clear about this measure being combined with the existing measure, and that if this measure is endorsed, it will replace the existing measure, hence we'll have to retire the existing measure on January 5th. And it is a 30-day member vote period. Well, we'll keep you updated when we summarize the meeting minutes as well to send out to you. Any questions about those next steps for this measure?
None. Sounds good.
Okay. And then as far – I'm sorry?
Oh, I was just agreeing with the majority.
Oh, great. Much appreciated. And as far as the CMS appeal letter, we'll keep you informed as that progresses through. Any questions about that at this time? Again, thank you all for a very thoughtful discussion, both about the public and member comments and about the appeal letters for the two measures that CMS wanted to put forth.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Thanks.
CMS for calling in.
Right. Have a happy holiday.
And happy holiday.
Bye.
Happy New Year.